After finishing my undergraduate degree in religion, I headed off to New York City as a Global Service Corps missionary for the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship. I thought that I would head to seminary after I finished up my 2-year commitment. But while I was in New York, my world expanded. I realized my theological framework was too small, and I discovered that my faith needed some room to be transformed. While I had no idea what I would do, I knew that seminary wasn't the right next step for me in that moment. I packed up my apartment in New York and moved back to South Carolina to try to discern what was next. I talked with people in many different jobs and vocations along the way, and since I hadn't prepared myself for more practical careers as a religion major and minor, some suggested that I consider graduate school. But in what? Oddly enough, I got interested in business school by taking a practice test for the GMAT, the business school entrance exam. Yes, your pastor is kind of a nerd. I loved math all my life, and it seemed like a practical way I could use those skills. I researched schools, put in my applications, and was invited to Wake Forest for a scholarship weekend, where we visited classes to get a better sense of the school. We went to class, settled into our seats, and as the class began, my host introduced me and told the professor and his classmates a little bit about my background in ministry. To which the professor replied, "Oh, so you're trading God for the golden dollar." The whole room gasped. I denied his accusations and didn't think that much more about it. The students were upset. Two even followed me to the parking lot later that afternoon to apologize for what happened. And a few days later, I got a long email from the professor offering an apology himself. He said what he had hoped to do was to challenge his students because he felt they were focused on the golden dollar, and he was truly sorry if he had offended me in the process. Business school is certainly one of the places where success is often measured in dollars. Rankings, for example, are based on the starting salaries of graduates, at least in part. The professor set up this binary between God and money in the challenge, which isn't completely true, but he certainly made a point. The truth is, we have many definitions of success, but at its most basic level, it has to do with securing our futures. Getting an education will let us get a good job. A good job will let us secure shelter and food for ourselves and our families, and savings will allow us to build some protection around ourselves. This is at least one of the definitions of a successful life. Food and nourishment for our bodies, a safe place to lay our heads, and an education. These are good things, and we need them. The problem, it seems, is that we struggle to reach a place where we're satisfied with our level of security. As the storehouses of the wealthy grow larger and larger and the armies of the empires grow bigger, the fear driving the need for more and more security never seems to end. And poverty and oppression of all kinds lies in its wake. Even kings and queens, emperors, presidents, and billionaires never seem to feel secure enough. I'll never forget traveling to Xi'an, China, and visiting the terracotta warriors, these life-size stone soldiers from the 3rd century BCE, before Christ, were built to protect the emperor in his afterlife. there are three huge rooms, way bigger than this one, totaling more than 8,000. They're incredible, really. And I think they point to fear and the insatiable quest for security. Or perhaps more aptly, for certainty. During this series called Ordinary Time, we're guided in part by Dr. Kate Bowler, Duke Divinity School professor and author of the book Everything Happens for a Reason. Kate is a student of the prosperity gospel, a contemporary example of the mashup between the golden dollar and the church. She says the prosperity gospel promises a cure for tragedy. God will give you your heart's desire, money in the bank, a healthy body, a thriving family, and boundless happiness. Security for a good life, in other words. As a scholar, Dr. Bowler interrogates the claims of this movement and seeks to understand its inner workings. But this book isn't primarily about the prosperity gospel. Rather, it's about Kate's own cancer diagnosis and treatment. As she wrestles with her newfound reality, she realizes just how much of the prosperity gospel she finds in herself. At the heart of it all, she realizes how much she longs for the promise that she can curate her life, minimize her losses, and stand on her successes. She writes, "No matter how many times I rolled my eyes at the creed's outrageous uncertainties, I craved them just the same. Prosperity believers are addicted to self-rule, and so am I." That is background. I invite you to turn with me to today's gospel lesson, where we find two of the disciples, James and John, on the road to Jerusalem with Jesus. They press Jesus, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask." I'm wondering if there are any teachers in the room, or maybe just parents. What do you think when you hear that opening line? "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask." Jesus asks what they want, and they reply, "Allow one of us to sit on your right and the other on your left when you enter your glory." But why would they even go down this road with Jesus? James and John are brothers, the sons of Zebedee. Maybe they think they have a good shot at securing their future because they're part of Jesus' inner circle. After all, they're two of the first disciples called, and they're two of the four that get to go with Jesus to important places, like when he raises Jairus' daughter from the dead. Maybe they had been planning to ask Jesus this for a while. They were just looking for the right time. But their timing couldn't have been worse. If we back up just one verse before today's text, we learn that Jesus has just predicted his death for the third time, saying that they will spit on him, torture him, and kill him. And after 3 days, he will rise up. James and John clearly haven't taken in what Jesus has shared with them. It happens to be James and John not getting it in this particular moment, but all of the disciples in Mark's gospel find themselves in similar shoes. Mark displays the imperfections of the disciples again and again. They misunderstand Jesus' teachings and fail to recognize his power. They send children away from Jesus. They sleep when they're supposed to stay awake. They scatter when he's arrested. They're a bit of a mess, really. In our heart of hearts, however, We couldn't be more grateful for this honest portrayal of those closest to Jesus who try to follow and struggle to grasp his teachings all at the same time. It gives us the chance to find ourselves in the story and to see how Jesus has compassion over and over again, never giving up on them, never throwing in the towel, never deciding that it's just too hard and they're not worth it. If we get curious for a minute, it's not hard for us to imagine why James and John might have done this. They've placed their hopes in and their bets on Jesus. And as they're getting closer and closer to Jerusalem, maybe they think Jesus is about to become king. After all, the crowds are following them and they're excited. Maybe they think they have more faith in Jesus than he has in himself. Maybe they think that sitting on his right and his left is a just reward for having given up everything to follow Jesus. Maybe they don't know how to imagine power beyond the empire they grew up in. Regardless, Jesus challenges their question and presses them to see that he's up to something entirely different. Jesus is not headed to Jerusalem to become king and enforce his rules across the earth. Jesus is headed to Jerusalem to serve, to establish an upside-down kingdom, and as he has been from the beginning, to bind up the brokenhearted, to heal the sick, to set the prisoners free, to declare the year of Jubilee, where all debts are forgiven, and all property, sold or stolen as it has been in many cases, is returned. Jesus is explicit with the disciples in this moment. He says, "You know that the ones who are considered rulers by the Gentiles show off their authority over them, and their high-ranking officials order them around. But that's not the way it will be with you. Whoever wants to be first among you will be the slave of all. For the human one did not come to be served, but rather to serve and to give his life to liberate many people." I love the Common English Bible translation there, to liberate many people. Jesus shows us a different kind of success, a different kind of power. Jesus shows us the power of service, of taking up the towel to wash feet, of being exposed and vulnerable, of letting go of trying to protect ourselves and control God. Jesus shows us the liberation that comes in giving our lives away. A couple of weeks ago, we celebrated the life of Monsignor Oscar Romero. This week, I had the chance to join our Theology on Draft group in their study of his biography and sermons. The more I learn about this saint, the more I understand how he embodies the gospel of Jesus. Romero deeply understand the way of Jesus and what it meant to serve, to give his life to liberate many people. In one of the selections we read this week, Romero said this: "All of us, if we really want to know the meaning of conversion and of faith and confidence in one another, must become poor, or at least make the cause of the poor our inner motivation. That is when one begins to experience faith and conversion, when one has the heart of the poor, when one knows that the financial capital, political influence, and power are worthless, and that without God, we are nothing. To feel that need of God is faith and conversion. Beloved ones, the way of Jesus is vulnerable, and it is intimate. It is love in action. We must become poor, not rich. Whoever wants to be first among you will be the slave of all, for the human one didn't come to be served, but rather to serve and to give his life to liberate many people. May we follow the way of Jesus.